everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about. You see that right there? Those have been the scenes in the streets of France. What does that signal for Emmanuel Macron? It's complicated, but it's also not good for him. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm going to take you through this and tell you why. Let's do this thing. I want to start this show talking a little bit about Emmanuel Macron, the president of France. You know, he used to be one of the most popular leaders in all of Europe. The guy was really, really popular at the time. He was elected president around 2017 because he was seen as a good-looking, you know, common-sense guy who connected very much with the people of France and their needs. But take a look at the people of France now. Yeah, see, this has been kind of crazy what's been going on. Protesters taking to the streets of France. Some are angry at Macron, some are angry at the right. But there just seems to be a lot of anger right now in France. And what these images seem to confirm is that change is in the air. So let's talk about this a little bit. What's really happening right in France? It's kind of similar to what's happening in a lot of Western countries. As citizens appear to be tiring of leaders who seem to be more interested in world and global affairs than they do in their own affairs, you know, the stuff that affects the people. Macron, for example, has become more of a global ambassador than what his role was in the past. He fights now for Ukraine, worries about Taiwan, concerns himself with Israel and their needs. He hosts these lavish affairs with these foreign leaders, and he allows them to come into the palace with the guards all dressed up and the bugles playing. I mean, it's almost like he's not giving Parisians what Parisians always seem to want. And that's the energy that's spent on them and not on all these foreign leaders who are coming in for all these lavish affairs, right? Right now, Macron is not popular. And with parliamentary elections that are coming up in June, late June and early July, look, I'll just be honest with you. It's very possible that his opponents will take over his government, even though he still has like 3 years left in his presidency. Enter the leader of the right. Here she is, Marine Le Pen.
We're ready to turn the country around. We are ready to revamp France.
So here's what's interesting about her, about Le Pen, right? Unlike Macron, she's very popular and very much a populist, right? She seems to be perceived as much more oriented on the needs of the French people, for example, much less concerned about the needs of Israel and Ukraine and Taiwan and all those other countries. I'll give you an example of one of the specific issues that she's dealing with right now, right? While she has criticized Russia for its actions in Ukraine, she has also said repeatedly that she believes that France and Russia should work on becoming allies at some point in the future. Now, I can't help but wonder, Manila, if Macron is failing to read the tea leaves. Does he not look around and see what's going on and what the people are essentially saying? Kind of like what we have in this country. Or maybe he just doesn't care. What do you think?
Well, first, Rick, I kind of beg to differ on this one about Macron, your read. I disagree that Macron was ever, you know, this man of the people. There were just limited choices at the time he was elected. I mean, here's a guy who came from the banking world, made millions, and then at this point, you know, he's a lame duck leader and throwing anything at the wall that will stick. He came in as this young, charismatic guy. He charmed the French voters the same way that Barack Obama did stateside. But similar to Obama, his tenure has proved to be that of globalist designs. I mean, the big yellow vest protests that were sparked by the petrol tax hikes, then they were joined by protesters angered by their proposed increase in retirement age. Marine Le Pen, on the other hand, is kind of taking the MAGA approach, right? She's very Trumpian in her rhetoric, but more selective in her verbiage than Trump. I mean, she grew up in a world of politics, right?
But my point is this. She was popular before, but she seems more popular now. Is that just normal acceleration, or is it because the French people perceive Macron as a guy who wants to be more like Marie Antoinette?
So I would say, after decades of this of failed neoliberal leadership in France, we're perhaps seeing an overcorrection in the form of the National Front taking seats from Macron's party in the EU elections. I think Macron's party is in big trouble in these forthcoming snap elections coming up.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, speaking of presidents in trouble politically, I want you to look at what's happening right now, right here in the good old USA. Finally, some of the polling is in regarding former President Trump's conviction. It isn't good. I'll be honest with you. It's not good. While Republicans and Democrats, nothing changed with Republicans and Democrats. 21% of independents in an Ipsos poll just said they're now less likely to vote for Mr. Trump because he's a convicted criminal. Now, while you would think that would be incredibly great news for President Biden's numbers and that they would soar, wrong. They haven't. In fact, polls now show a fourth. 25% of all Americans at this point hate both candidates. They're called double haters. That's what they're actually being referred to in the polls. Never in the history of America have these numbers been seen. 25% of all Americans and growing now hate both candidates. Mr. Biden's problem is what he just can't get away from because it's visual, right? People are seeing with their own eyes this feeble little old man we all want to feel sorry for, but he seems confused. Almost seems like he's kind of, like he's losing it. I'll give you some examples. Look at this. This is the president at the G7 summit watching a parachuting exhibition. He appears to just now watch. Keep watching. Watch Biden on the right side of your screen. And as you watch him, you're going to see that he just wanders away. He just starts walking away. Nobody knows why. Finally, the Italian prime minister, watch, she goes and grabs him. That's Meloni. She goes over and grabs him and brings him back. She's like his granddaughter, saying, "Grandpa, get over here." And she retrieves him to bring him back to the group. Let me show you another piece of video. Watch this. All right, look at this. Here he is at a fundraiser in Los Angeles recently. This is that George Clooney event we told you about. The optics here are so bad. There's the former President Obama appearing to grab him by the hand and lead him away from the stage. This is not a good image, especially considering that Obama's already perceived as the puppet master by the president's opponents. All right, come back to me now because I want to show you another one here, Victor. Take a look at this. Here is the president at a White House event where all the attendees have been handpicked. They're all friendlies, right? So there's no antagonists here because they're all invited to the White House. There's no reporters here, just a few social media personalities like this TikTok guy who comes up to the president and he asks him what is essentially a reasonable question. Watch.
And I know you're a typical press guy. You're grabbing me in front of this all this stuff. I trust you as far as I throw your phone. I have a good arm, man.
Absolutely.
I can throw a long way. But my point is this.
Yes.
I have made very clear to the Israelis what they have to do in the near term. If they don't, what's going to happen?
So what's going to happen? Is the U.S. going to cut off funding?
I came because you told me I have a nice suit and you didn't comment on my suit today, so I feel a little offended.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you step back in, sir, please?
Thank you.
I mean, it's tough to look at, okay? I'm sorry. Manila, let me bring you back in here. As you're watching these videos, I mean, his aide has to come in, again, grab him by the hand and take him away. This is just not a pretty picture. I mean, I said months and months ago on this program that I didn't think he was going to continue as a candidate or make it to the presidency. As a candidate, I'm not saying he's going to pass away or anything. I got to tell you, looking at some of these things, I'm standing by that reporting at this point, Manila.
Yeah, Rick, Biden moments are becoming a trending hashtag on social media these days, and obviously for good reason. What we saw there with Georgia Maloney going over there to fetch the president like she's his personal nurse, at this point, it's just sad, in my opinion. I mean, forget how cringy it is to see the so-called leader of the free world so feeble and lost. it's sad to me that Biden's family would allow this charade to continue. Why doesn't anyone love this man enough to say, yeah, all right, Pops, it's time to retire? Listen, there are spry 80-somethings out there in the world, you know, running marathons, doing things that people mm-hmm. half their age like me can't do. But Joe Biden ain't one of them. That's an observable fact. This is not political mudslinging, Rick.
No.
It is an observable
no.
fact. But then you have paid liars and propagandists like the White House press secretary,
yeah,
Karine Jean-Pierre, outright lying to our faces and telling us not to believe our lying eyes, implying videos from the G7 or the fundraiser that these were, you know, all deep fake. You know, this is just terrible. Don't believe yourself, is what she's saying.
The American people are essentially being told, we know he doesn't look good in public, but trust us, when he's at the White House or when he's having meetings, he's totally different. He's filled with vim and vigor. We've said this before, and it's just an amazing thing. It's really insulting to the intelligence of the American people. And I will say this, and I think this is where the rubber meets the road on this story. The Joe Biden that I remember seeing as a candidate is so different from the Joe Biden that I see now. What I'm saying is, in these 3.5 years, and I think you probably see it too, the deterioration of this man has been manifest compared to anything I've seen in a long time, including Reagan. And I'm old enough to have lived through Reagan's presidency. And at the end, he wasn't doing so well either, but not as bad as this.
Yeah, it. All I can say is from my own personal experience with my grandmother, is they kind of hit a tipping point, right? And
yeah,
and it goes downhill pretty quickly. And I feel like, unfortunately, that is what we are witnessing right now before our very eyes, even though Karine Jean-Pierre says, don't believe your lying eyes.
The pictures tell the stories. They always do. Thanks, Manila. Appreciate it. All right, so here's what we're going to do. When we come back, my next guest, Navy, U.S. Navy veteran, also co-founder of the massively popular news platform, DD Geopolitics, important that geo, where she says they are transcending the borders of a multipolar world. Her name is Sarah Bills. There she is, joins us to discuss in just a bit. We'll talk Gaza, U.S., and a whole lot more. Stay there, don't go away. We'll be right back.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
The Swiss-hosted Ukraine peace conference was an abject failure. It failed because the issue of peace was not on the agenda. They did everything they could to escalate and prolong the conflict. Meanwhile, Moscow has its own plans to see an end to the fighting.
Let me tell you about Sarah Bills. She's very popular. She's very smart. DD Geopolitics is her podcast. It's very, very popular, and she would be one of those that we would tend to call a truth teller. And because of that, she's been getting a lot of heat lately. As you look her up, you find out that a lot of folks are being critical of her and her work because they don't want her, I think, to say some of the things that she says. Sarah's good enough to join us now. Hi, Sarah, how are you?
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I was just reading a couple of these stories. I think it was the New York Post that was taking a couple of hits at you. How do you feel about that, and why do you think they do it?
Well, I think that they do it because they're paid to do it by Ukrainian information war people, but also because I was so extremely supportive of Russia and critical of what the West was doing in Ukraine that it was official to silence us. Also, the fact that I'm prior military gives me more, offends them even further. So they really feel the need to go after me. But most of the stuff in the New York Post article is from random sources that I don't really know. So I kind of learned a lot about myself from the New York Post article that I might have not known before.
Well, you go against the narrative, right? And the narrative in the United States seems to be that there are certain countries that we just have to hate on. And Russia's one of those countries, just as right. Iran is one of those countries. And China is one of those countries. So that narrative is created, and anybody who goes against that narrative. What troubles me is it's okay to have a narrative in your mind. You can be against Russia or for Iran or for China or for any country. What bothers me is the lack of facts and the lack of people, especially in the media when I watch them, knowing anything about what happened in 2002 or what happened during the fomented coup in 2014 or just really knowing anything about our world outside of maybe, you know, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and London, if we're lucky. I think that they've taken advantage of the fact that the two, what we know as the two communist, big communist countries, Soviet Union and China, kind of were isolationist during the time. And they took, America definitely took advantage of that by presenting these meta narratives that are now in our subconscious of the American populace. We, you know, China is this authoritarian dictatorship that kills people in Tiananmen Square. And Russia is the backwards, alcoholic, communist, Nazi, like these are, and then after that, you have that in your head. And then after that, everything that you're told is measured up against that meta-narrative.
Do you know how crazy it is to compare Russia to Nazi Germany when it was actually Russia that did away with Nazi Germany? I mean, how stupid do you have to be, right?
Well, that's part of it. We don't learn about Russia's participation in World War II. If you go through school in the West, in the United States, which is, I went through high school and junior high in the United States, World War II starts at Pearl Harbor and Normandy. There is no Eastern Front to a student in the United States. It's only Normandy and then Okinawa and the Pacific. That's it. That's World War II. America came in. They rescued the Brits. They saved all the Jews. That's the end. We don't even learn about Russian participation, Soviet participation in the war. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the geopolitics that are taking place right now. And I think one of the most fascinating things that are going on right now, and some of the reports that I was even reading just this morning as I was waking up and catching up on the news, is this tiff between Israel and Hezbollah. And now everyone's talking about that could be the new front. I know we've talked about this in the past, but now it's really starting to look like this thing could be another opportunity for Mr. Netanyahu to prolong the fighting, which would be good because that's how he stays out of jail and that's how he remains prime minister. Did I get that wrong?
I absolutely 100% agree. Bibi Netanyahu is falling apart. I know that Joe Biden wouldn't mind replacing Bibi Netanyahu. So Bibi right now wants to just last until the American election. He can't take a ceasefire before the American election. There can't be any huge monumental changes to this conflict before the American election. And I think that's what Bibi is kind of counting on. And I mean, for all intents and purposes, the majority of Gaza is destroyed. In terms of their infrastructure. So them moving over to the north to bother Hezbollah is not too far out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, but, you know, let's think about this for a minute. I want to speak as an American citizen. I live in this country. I love this country. And I love it a lot more than I love Israel. Why are all of our decisions being made on behalf of Israel? And why is it now possible that between the Houthis and Hezbollah, we could end up in a war with Iran simply because that's what Bibi Netanyahu and Israel wants? It's not fair to me. It's not fair to my family. It's not fair to my kids who may end up having to fight in that war. And why are we able to ask these questions, except maybe you and me here on this show? Otherwise, this question's never asked, it's never repeated, and it's never answered.
We haven't been able to ask these questions probably since September 11th, when it really became apparent that Israel was going to take a very commanding role in our foreign policy in the Middle East. It really became apparent after September 11th when they were very gung-ho about the Iraq war. They didn't really care about Afghanistan. But I think that with all of the things that were happening in America at the time, maybe everyday Americans missed the fact that there was basically a Zionist coup of our foreign policy. And now our foreign policy lines up exactly like Israel's in the Middle East. Maybe theirs is a little bit more accelerationist and extremist, but our foreign policy is the same as Israel's in the Middle East. So until we change our foreign policy in the Middle East, we won't change our relationship with Israel. And just like Joe Biden said, if by any chance that the Houthis and Hezbollah and Hamas are successful in defeating Israel, Joe Biden already said, I'll just make a new one.
I don't know, I don't know if you had a chance to look at some of those pictures I showed a little while ago. I was telling during the break, I was telling some of the folks here, my crew, that I felt sad as an American watching this. Those visuals of President Biden just looks, with each passing day, like his condition is getting worse and worse. What goes through your head when you look at these pictures, either personally or geopolitically? Share that with me.
Well, geopolitically, I don't think that it matters because Joe Biden is just a figurehead. I mean, I think he has been since the beginning of his term. It really was in the hands of Victoria Nuland, Barack Obama, Jake Sullivan, and Antony Blinken. Mm. From a personal and ethical standpoint, he's so far gone. I think that anybody who has any experience with dementia knows that once you hit a certain climax, it goes downhill very fast.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly. So he seems to be getting worse. I mean, I don't want to laugh, but like the other day it was interesting because like at the peace summit, the leaders kind of like corralled him and like guided him as a group because he was lost. And I was like, this is so bad. We're talking about possible World War III. And these world leaders just like consciously guide this old lost man.
Well, but you know, the problem I have with some of those world leaders is they may be more sane, but they do the same stupid crap that he does in many ways. It's like a consortium of idiocy as far as I'm concerned.
I think that they might know where they are, though.
Yes.
I feel like George Maloney knows where she is.
Well,
they might not be competent, but they're coherent, I think.
Yeah, no, I will grant you that. What do you think is happening with the European Union, with NATO, and with some of these transfixes that seem to be taking place now with the, you know, with what is a very different world, with the Global South, with BRICS, literally standing up to these colonial powers and showing some defiance? When will we see the breaking point, or are we just going to be stuck or transfixed between these countries, India, Brazil, Russia, China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, all these countries that are looking at the rest of the Western world and saying, you guys aren't the big guys anymore. We're going to have to share this power somehow. I don't see the sharing taking place yet. I just see a lot of antagonism. What's your view?
Well, not yet. I mean, I think that we'll see bits and pieces. We've seen, you were talking about France before I came on, but we've seen France fall apart in Africa, which is part of the decolonization process.
Correct.
Which helped initiate by taking on NATO. So we're seeing these things, also a few more defiant positions in South America with Maduro and Brazil even. So there are these sort of chinks in the armor starting to show, you know, when the fact that the United States stole Russia's money, that's a weakness. That's not a power move. So there's a lot of things happening that if you pay attention, the tipping point, I don't know. Dugin thinks it's 2024, but I think that's way too soon. But I think that this year for BRICS will be a very heavy Southeast Asian BRICS and class. And I think that that's going to be very important. So we'll see maybe Vietnam and Malaysia.
What you just said something I thought was interesting, and I've never heard it put that way. You said that the U.S. Freezing Russia's assets and essentially sanctioning them and stealing their money is a sign of weakness. Define.
Well, it actually puts the dollar at more risk now that we're saying it's not viable and it's not stable to keep your money with us. If we don't like you, we'll take the interest. So that's a sign of weakness, the fact that America was willing to go to that length and almost depreciate their own dollar. I mean, the dollar, only thing that holds up the dollar is the military and the faith that people have in it. The military is getting a little bit shaky. People don't have as much faith in the military. But so how much faith do the people have in the government, which is literally zero? And now you're stealing from other governments. It's depleting the trust even further. It's just eroding that integrity.
We have 1 minute left. Final question. I want to ask you about your endeavor. I think it's fascinating what you're doing. I think your stuff is really good. At what point did you find that this was your place? as opposed to wanting to work at CNN or Fox or whatever, any of those institutional places? When did you reach your comfort zone and how? And you got 45 seconds to tell me that.
Okay, well, I always wanted to go, ever since I in the military, I knew that I didn't wanted to be against this sort of American imperialism. I knew that this was the place for all of us when we were all doxxed and put into all of that danger, like you read in the New York Post article, and when we decided to keep going and not to sacrifice our politics and to keep going in the vein that we were still going, and we are fine. And so now I think that's where we're supposed to be.
Defiance, thank you very much. It's what you're doing.
Thank you.
Good stuff. DD Geopolitics is the name of the podcast. Sarah, you're a delight. Thanks so much for taking time to share with us. That's our show. I want to remind you of something. It's kind of like our mission here, right? What do? We tend to never look somewhere else for truths. We don't believe truths live in little boxes, right? Truths don't live in boxes. Truth is everywhere. That's what we believe. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll keep believing. We'll see you again next time.